Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held. To request notice of board meetings in writing, please email Monica at kboo.org.
KBOO Community Radio is the proud co-sponsor of the third annual Flash holiday show, running December 8th through 11th at the Alberta Abbey in Portland. Based on the 80s cult classic film Flash Gordon, Flash is Portland's premier rock opera parody, complete with a live rock band, Mercury Rising, formed at the School of Rock. Again, that's the third annual Flash holiday show, running December 8th through 11th at the Alberta Abbey, 126 Northeast Alberta Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And this is KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock in the a.m. Coming up, it's Water World, talking about the community of Linton and the tank farm there. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary, followed at 10:15 with Flashpoints with host Dennis Bernstein. Will the president of South Korea be forced to resign in shame? I guess that means they'll be addressing that question on that program. At 11, a Radio Geekly takes on gatekeeping. We'll hear from Feminist Frequency and their efforts to overcome the oppression of women in geek culture. And thanks to all the KBOO members for your generous support. If you're not currently a member, you somehow missed the holiday mini drive, why not just go right to kboo.fm right now or at some time soon. To remedy that oversight, click on the word donate. And now, as promised, here is Waterworld.
Diversity of time. Turns her voice into sugar water.
Listening to KBOO Portland on all the various receivers and transmitters, and this is Waterworld. I'm Kristen Yount, and I wanted to talk a little bit today about the Willamette River, specifically the Linton neighborhood. The Linton neighborhood has a tank farm, and that's a place where petroleum products are stored for use. And there is a heritage pipeline. It comes from Canada. It's called the Cascade Pipeline, I believe. And it's a Kinder Morgan entity. And Kinder Morgan also has some pretty big tanks by the river. Wow, I just dove right into that. And So there are people that live in Linton. People have been living there for four generations. It's an old logging community. It's really close to Forest Park, Old Germantown Road, and it's, you know, been... It's a longstanding community, and forever they are fighting industry and fighting, well, not industry, but industrial infrastructure from being built there. So I spoke with a longtime Linton resident, Jerise Weller, who is also on the Portland Harbor Community Advisory Group, and that's the Portland Harbor CAG, and I... met her through the CAG, and she had a lot to say about Linton. She's always telling me about the pipeline. So I finally got her on record talking about this leaky pipeline. So I'm going to go ahead and ask Sam to play this interview that I did with Jerise last night.
All right. I'm here with Jerise Weller, and she has been on the CAG since 2006. Is that right?
Yes.
Something like that. All right. So... Jerise is a longtime Linton resident, and for those who don't know, Linton is on Highway 30, and it is home to a gas tank farm, and I really want my listeners to hear about the history of the tank farm and a little bit about Linton and the pipelines that go along with the farm. So what do you have to say?
So the tank farms were first built in Linton in like 1914 were the first tank farms. Linton, of course, has been a city for several. We have like four generation families living there. We've been there since 1843, way before these tank farms were. So it's not a NIMBY situation. And we're really concerned because of the tank farms are almost none of them are earthquake proof. And as Yume Wang of Dogami says, it is the worst possible place in the state of Oregon to have these located on this liquefiable soils with the so close to the edge of the river and dangerous and all located in the same thing. 95% of our fuel sources are located there. There'll be no fuel for rescue and rebuilding. And the history is even, in fact, as long ago as, maybe I should get back to 2005, we had a Linton plan that we'd worked on for many, many years, for 10 years, and it was struck down in City Hall, Mayor Potter at the time, and Saltzman and Randy Leonard voted against it. And they took testimony from Kinder Morgan and PBEM, it was Patty Reuter at the time, saying that it was way too horrible to have residents within 400 feet of these tank farms. However, a lot of us are 400 feet or less from the tank farms, you know, the current residents. So this was our neighborhood plan, which had a mixed use plan. So it was residential, commercial, and light industry is what we wanted. And we worked with industry at the time. We had 400 foot buffers, and which code at the time only called for, and I think it still only calls for 150 foot buffers. So, but they testified that it was way too dangerous. They totally nixed our plan. But it was interesting that Kinder Morgan just recently testified at the fossil fuel thing, saying it was perfectly safe, you know, to be there. Even though they testified at this hearing that it wasn't perfectly safe. In fact, if you look at the documents from that hearing at City Council, they say it's not even safe to be more than 400 feet. I mean, it's disastrous. It's, but yet they testified. They also testified that the tanks weren't more than 50 years old. Well, most of those tanks were built in the 40s and 50s. The two newest tanks that were built, well, actually, they just recently did a new tank, but the two newest built tanks that were built that were kind of right in front of the condos there are far less than 400 feet. They're just across, basically across the highway. So however length of the highway and a little bit, you know, across the railroad tracks on the highway. That's it from all those condos that were built there. And they were built when the standards for code was to a 5. And of course, we're going to experience much better than that. There's not only the subduction zone earthquake, but there's also 3 fault lines right there. One on the other side of the river, one that runs about from the hillside to St. Helens Road, and then another one that runs directly underneath those tank farms. So it's not just even the Cascadia subduction zone earthquake.
Oh.
So, and what's going to happen is that's going to create a domino effect of you know, once we have an earthquake, or really accidents. There have been lots of accidents there too, and we've come close, so close to, you know, we've dodged a bullet several times in the last few years for being really dangerous. But so these other tanks, you know, were built, and this was so after this resolution that kept us from getting our neighborhood plan. They were built after that, and so it's like, okay, so there seems to be some kind of a, you can't have it both ways. I mean, Kinder Morgan can't say it's safe, you know, PBM can't say it's safe, and then do things that are not safe.
Right, so they subverted your neighborhood plan mm-hmm. in 2005, mm-hmm. and then they built new tanks, basically claiming the opposite of what they said when they subverted the neighborhood plan.
Exactly, and even at the same time in 2005, you could look on Kinder Morgan's site, and it said, oh, it's perfectly safe to be within 150 feet. But they're testifying to you know, the exact opposite.
So just to clarify, we have Kinder Morgan, and if you're coming from Portland and you're going down Highway 30 and you're approaching Linton, what tanks can you appreciate from the road?
You can see all of them from the road. I mean, it should be a homeland security issue too. I mean,
right?
And there's several other companies than just Kinder Morgan. There's Valero, BP Arco, and Kinder Morgan, and Chevron, and so there's several other companies other than just Kinder Morgan.
Uh-huh.
So, but they also own the pipeline.
Okay.
And the pipeline is basically a leaking legacy pipeline that was put in like 1960s, early 60s, that goes from all the way from Cherry Point.
Where's Cherry Point?
Cherry Point's in Washington.
Okay.
So it's a BP facility.
Is it like Kelso or, I mean, Longview or?
Cherry Point. No, it's beyond that.
So closer to the ocean.
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
Just checking.
So, and it comes from Alaska.
Oh, okay.
You know, So that's the refineries at Cherry Point, and then it comes, you know, into, and so the reason, in fact, one of the reasons to not move the tank farms is because of this pipeline. Well, the pipeline really needs to be replaced. It comes into Linton, and then I believe it goes on further down, but it mainly goes, the other pipelines go across the river and go out to the airport. So technically these tanks could be moved because you need to replace this line anyway.
Right.
You know, so they could be moved to safer ground. But, a few years ago, we had a crosswalk sign put across St. Helens Road, and they dug 4x4 foot footings, and the footings kept filling up with this oozing oil that was literally eating the gloves of the workers, and they literally had to pump out the fuel or whatever it was, this black oozing yuck, in order to be able to pump in the concrete at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there's no explanation other than that's right where the pipeline goes through, you know, that's a potential, you know, where it's coming from. So
when you're going along Highway 30 and you look on the west side of, I guess, the west side of the highway, there's like little flags every so often and it says pipeline. Is that
that's
the one
Kinder
you're
Morgan
talking
pipeline.
About?
Yes, that is definitely the Columbia pipeline. Yeah, that's the Kinder Morgan's pipeline.
So every so often there's a flag and you can kind of, you can
dig.
See it.
It's,
yeah,
yes.
Don't dig. And so you were saying that there's also a gas line right there?
Yes, natural gas that also goes through there. And so it's, And we see them, we used to see them more often, but they actually have a mechanical pig that goes through the line and tells them.
What does it look like?
I don't know.
Is it just like a little robot or something?
Something of that sort.
Okay, yeah, I'll look that up.
It runs through the line, uh-huh. And it runs through the line, and it tells them where the leaks are. Well, they lose the pig. The holes are so big that they lose this pig. And then you see them late at night digging up the road.
Trying to find it?
Trying to find where the leak is, trying to find the pig. Yeah. So, and it's not only just the Kinder Morgan that's doing that, but it's also the gas company. So is also trying to find, you know, their leaks. So, yep, it's pretty scary.
Yeah, so right here at home, we have a major pipeline issue. And they started doing, we have brownfield issues all along that area. Mm-hmm. I'm not too well read on that, but I have learned that core samples have been taken. So basically they're just pulling water, what's supposed to be water, off of the table. And what are they finding?
Oil.
Shocking.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it's, in fact, we've actually, this is years ago before Kinder Morgan put up the concertina wire. So as the public, we own from high tide to low tide. I mean, that's mm-hmm. our access. They really can't deny us access. But they put up, after we were going down and complaining, you know, after taking tours going along the river, they put up this concertina wire so you can't even access it. But we were seeing all kinds of really bad chemicals. In fact, you could see, so there's a basalt layer uh-huh. and there's the sand layer. Because that whole hillside is all basalt, and right. so the sand is on top of it. So we could actually see the oil coming up, you know, from the when it hit the basalt layer and bubbling oil. So this was many years ago, you know, that you could see this. And Kinder Morgan, I don't think was, you know, and now it is. Finally, they finally looked at it, but they really, DEQ wasn't really looking at, you know, how bad it was there until we pretty much brought it to their attention. I mean, maybe they were, but it seems like they didn't really pay any attention until we on the CAGs, you know, started saying, why aren't you doing a lot of these other places? So,
what I've come to realize is that the DEQ is actually a complaint-driven system. If the community doesn't complain about something that they see leaking in the uplands into the water sources or in the air, they're not going to test it unless somebody, and that's with the air quality in Southeast Portland. It was just an outside agency that tested it and then brought it to DEQ's attention.
I think you're absolutely right.
Oh my God. What? Oh, yeah. What? There's stuff? Oh, we should test that. Like, I don't know. I think that, you know, people just assume that agencies like the health authority and the DEQ are assessing things as they go, but it's not. It's a, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of thing. Hear no evil, see no evil kind of thing. But there's evil to be seen, apparently. I kind of want to, if there's anything else you want to say about the community of Linton before I move on, I have another question.
Just that we seem to be the lost community that, we're a very vocal, scrappy community, but yet we don't, I'm case of like ODOT, you know, it's all about transportation of vehicles and, truck traffic. Mm-hmm. And we recently had, they repaved the road through, St. Helens Road through Linton and took out one of our crosswalks or our medians. Where we cross right at 107th to our community center. Mm-hmm. And didn't even tell us that this was gonna happen. They just took it out, wiped it out. We had to get funding for it. We got a grant to actually put these in and put in all of our medians because of a child that was killed, Ryan Calvert was killed. And so, I mean, we wanted to provide a safe place and a visually safe place, you know, because that's really what the medians are about, to right. slow traffic down.
It's an institutional control, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so they took it out without asking us, without doing anything. And they said it was because it was substandard. But yet they're not going to rebuild another one that is standard, you know, up to grade. So we're a little perturbed in Linton. you know, that, and so I think they should actually give us something in exchange. Like, okay, if you're not going to do that, then put, like in Seattle, where they put lighted crosswalks. You know, when a person hits the crosswalk, it flashes light on the ground. I mean, give us something else then. Give us something that's more safe.
Or put a police there so you could have a nice speed trap at night or something.
Well, they do that anyway.
Well, they do, but it's not a... Yeah. It's like in Portland, you know, on Burnside, they're producing all these, like, gleaming curb cuts that are, you know, financed by the developers that are coming into our town. And, well, we'll build this huge building with no offset from the street, but we'll put in a curb cut while we're in there, you know. It's like having these curb cuts put in and then having somebody come in and just take them all out. The removal of your median happened when?
This is just within the last couple months.
Like in the night, they just removed your median without telling anybody?
Yeah, I mean, we've been having meetings with them and this never came up. You know, they've been at our neighborhood meetings and that never came up that they were going to take out our median. but they had in some inner department meeting, I guess, decided that it was too dangerous for speeding motorists to, you know, because they were, you know, really drunk drivers that think they're driving on the freeway.
Right.
You know, plus we also had a police officer that was driving, I hear, 110 miles an hour, driving through the middle of Linton, which is probably not a good idea, you know, on a call. And in fact, I think this call was in Scappoose or something, hit that median and actually hit one of the businesses, and the business had to be replaced. But I mean, that's about lack of control from the drivers.
Fault.
It's not the median's fault. No, it's a lack of control and the lack of good judgment on the part of the drivers, you know. And so it felt safer to have that there. It felt safer, you know, to go to that spot. So like I said, if they feel that it's not, then they should give us something else, you know, to replace it. Something, you know, that will make it safe, make it a safer place to cross.
All right. I'm here with...
Yeah, so... That was Dereese Weller from the Portland Harbor Community Advisory Group, which is a volunteer group that was assembled about 15 years ago. It's the volunteer organization that is supposed to inform the community about the Environmental Protection Agency's work on the Willamette Harbor, the Portland Harbor Superfund site, which is from the Broadway Bridge to just about the confluence of the Columbia River. And this Superfund site has been here for 15 years. People who have heard the show before already know that I've been talking about it a lot for the last year because public input is part of the Superfund process. And so as a community, we can inform the government about how we would like the remediation of the river to move forward. And we are anticipating a record of decision that will be out at the end of the year, possibly the beginning of next year. And that will be the final plan as negotiated between community stakeholders, possible responsible parties along the river, of which there are 142, and the government. And so, it is, the plan is being vetted by the state of Oregon's DEQ right now. And so once they've decided that the federal plan matches up with the state plan, they will reveal it. And then the Portland Harbor Community Advisory Group will advise the community of what the plan should entail, and we'll move forward after that. As you may have heard, there was a public comment period. It was over the summertime. It ended on September 6th, and the city of Portland is to speak on behalf of the citizens of Portland, it is also an entity that is being charged with cleaning up the river. The city of Portland has put $50 million into cleaning up the river, mainly with sewer modifications. And so they, by joining the remediation process early on and modifying the sewer and taking part in testing and measuring baseline contamination in the river, they are hoping, I've heard from the Bureau of Environmental Services, they are hoping that the percentage of the overall cleanup will be less because they have taken the initiative to be a part of the planning, and other groups that have begun to plan the cleanup are the lower or in the Lower Willamette group, and you can look that up. It is the Port of Portland and a few big players on the river, and so they were responsible for testing sediment and things like that. So I'm going to go ahead and open up the phone lines if anyone has comments about the Superfund process, or Linton, any Lintonites out there want to say something about what you heard, or if I have any CAG members out there that want to call in and talk about the CAG, then you can do that. It's 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. So, yeah, maybe we can hear some music for a minute.
There's a fine green valley not far from Vancouver, home of the black bear, the marten, and the cougar. It's a tree-rich valley where the Skagit River flows, a home for God's creatures since heaven only knows. Skagit Valley, Skagit Valley, Ray Williston is selling you away. Skagit Valley, Skagit Valley, they would turn you to a mud pond to run the Coca-Cola coolers in Seattle. Well, the parks are getting fewer, the trees are getting thin, the cities all are reaching out to take the wildwood in, and the world is getting poorer with every mile they clear, and they'd sell our Skagit acres for $5.50 a year. Skagit Valley, Skagit Valley, Ray Williston is selling you away. Skagit Valley, Skagit Valley, they would turn you to a mud pond. All my sisters and my brothers in this shining northern land, it's time to get together, take each other's hand, and ring around the wilderness and keep the gangs away who would ravage our sweet country for a shameful pocket full of pay. Skagit Valley, Skagit Valley, no grabber will get you for a prize. Skagit Valley, Skagit Valley, we'll let no vandal drown you, keep you as we found you. British Columbia's forest paradise.
That was, of course, Malvina Reynolds with Skagit Valley Forever. Yeah, that's a beautiful song, I believe. All right, so I pulled this off of the Oregon Department of Transportation, which is the agency that governs pipelines. And I'm just going to read from this for those of you who don't have the luxury of the internet at home. And also just for your information, petroleum pipelines. Because there are no petroleum refineries in Oregon, approximately 70% of Oregon's petroleum products come to the state by pipeline from Washington State. The remaining 30% from Washington, California, and other countries comes by ship and ocean-going barge up the Columbia River to Portland for reload to other modes. Olympic Pipeline Company moves the equivalent of 570 tanker trucks daily through a pipeline from the Puget Sound to Portland. The Kinder Morgan Energy Partners moves the equivalent of 170 tanker trucks daily through a pipeline from Portland to Eugene. Chevron Pipeline moves petroleum from marine terminals on the lower Willamette River to Portland International Airport through a pipeline that passes through eastern Oregon from Salt Lake City to Pasco, Washington. Valero LP has a line from a marine terminal at Umatilla to the Union Pacific Railroad's Hinkle Yard near Hermiston. And then it has a subcategory of issues. Because Oregon isn't home to any petroleum refineries, it has a stake in the safety and viability of pipelines that originate in other states. Portland is currently a statewide hub for petroleum pipelines, making it an integral part of Oregon's petroleum industry. A Cross Cascade pipeline project in Washington was proposed in the 1990s to help create more capacity on existing Olympic property, but it appears unlikely for economic and environmental reasons. Natural gas pipelines, as Dries mentioned, there is a natural gas line that runs right next to this Heritage Pipeline that goes down Highway 30 to the airport. Natural gas service is available in about 80% of Oregon's population. Nearly all of Oregon's natural gas comes by pipeline from Canada and Colorado's San Juan Basin. Northwest Natural, Cascade Natural Gas, and Avista Corporation operate local natural gas pipelines. Northwest Natural has a large underground gas storage field near Mist in Columbia County, and two liquefied natural gas storage facilities, one in Newport and one in Portland. Onshore LNG terminals have been proposed in multiple locations along the lower Columbia River, including Broadwood, which is under federal permitting, Astoria, and Port Westward, the port of St. Helens. So that's just a little page from the Oregon Department of Transportation website about the pipeline network in Oregon, in case you were wondering. And as Dries also said, some of these pipelines are very old and very, very leaky. So I just want to tell you that you are listening to KBOO Portland. This is Waterworld. I'm Kristen Yount, and I'm talking about local water issues, specifically around the Willamette River from the Broadway Bridge to the confluence of the Columbia. That is a Superfund site. I have a CAG newsletter in front of me. It's the Citizen Advisory Group. And I'm going to read to you we have a consultant. His name is Peter DeFer, and he did call on the EPA to update its human health risk assessment with new research that indicates PCBs, or polychlorinated biphenyls, can go airborne from water, travel on air currents, and harm humans up to 5 miles away. PCBs, a known carcinogen and endocrine disruptor, are considered the most toxic chemical in the lower Willamette River. The Portland Harbor Community Advisory Group, in its formal comments, has also asked the EPA to better assess the risk from PCBs going airborne. The research came forward in two studies in 2006 and 2015 by Dr. David Carpenter, a public health physician and director of the Institute for Health and the Environment at the University of Albany, New York. The 2006 study focuses on various routes of PCB exposure, while the 2015 study describes how PCBs can enter the air from water and sediments. It also examines their release from dump sites, a phenomena that varies according to how tightly the sites are covered. Both studies can be found on the PHCAG website at portlandharborcag.info. So at last month's CAG meeting, we had a presentation from the city administrators of St. Helens. Mr. John Walsh came with an engineering group that has been working with St. Helens to develop the shoreline there. And there's a very old, I think it's Boise Elliott, paper manufacturing pond there. The city wants to fill in the pond because currently it is below the waterline, some yardage off of the actual shoreline. There's this old pond, and it's very large, and the city wants to fill it, and they have this idea that they're going to take the fill from the material that is dredged from the Willamette during the Superfund cleanup. And the proposed plan for cleaning the Willamette features taking the most dangerous PCB-laden sediment from the worst polluted deposits in the Willamette, removing that material and treating it, and then putting it in a proper landfill. But the city of St. Helens thinks it would be a really good idea to take that material and put it in their old pond, their old holding pond. It was alarming for me to hear this plan because I think they underestimate the toxicity of this fill dirt. I asked the city administrator if their citizens of St. Helens were aware of the plan to take this dangerous material and put it as fill dirt. It's like Love Canal. There was all this, renderings of grassy housing developments and, a few baseball diamonds, kind of like the field that they built at the University of Portland, so close to the McCormick and Baxter site that was capped as a pre-remediation project. So, it's sort of this, contemporary design feature to sort of pit like grassy athletic fields over potentially dangerous fill dirt. So I thought it was important for my people out there, for KBOO listeners, to just be aware that plans for this action are in the works in St. Helens. I kind of just mentioned that also in St. Helens, they want to perhaps put some kind of a terminal there, an LNG terminal in St. Helens. So just for your information, that's what's going on there. I'm not trying to say that we should only be thinking locally, but since we're talking about pipelines and stuff like that so much with Standing Rock and Waterworld definitely stands in solidarity with Standing Rock, and I'm so impressed with everything that's going on there. But if you feel sad because you cannot go, you can always look at some of the things that are going on right here. And you can find out more by going to portlandharborcag.org. The newest Willamette River Insider newsletter is out. And you can find out what's going on with the Superfund sites. So I also talked about public comments, and I sort of touched on the city of Portland drafted a comment about the proposed plan that was put out by the EPA in June of this year. Many Portland Harbor Community Coalition members, the Portland Harbor CAG, were looking to the city to really take a stand on the proposed plan that was less of defending their position as a polluter and more of the position of protecting the people of Portland. And overall, I think from my colleagues on the Portland Harbor CAG and from the people in the Portland Harbor Community Coalition, people were upset with the city's comments. It's a like a 20-something page document, and I combed through it, and I've been looking at it now a lot, and basically, you know, if you've been following along, you know that there were six proposed alternatives for cleaning up the Willamette Harbor, the Portland Harbor. And of the six or seven plans, the EPA chose one of the least effective and least active plans that were presented time and time again over years. So they picked, we had options A through G, and they actually created another option called option I, which was just not very much dredging. It's only 8% of the river is being attended to, and the entire 11 miles is polluted, the sediment. There's sort of a discrepancy between the city's position and the position of the Portland Harbor Community Coalition. We're saying that it's dangerous for people to be mucking about on the riverbanks because the sediment that's there is contaminated. And the city is still telling people that it's okay to swim and recreate in the river because the water is okay. And the sediment, you know, the sediment just supposedly stays on the bottom of the river, which if you've ever opened your eyes when you're swimming in fresh water, then you already know that you can see sediment everywhere surrounding you. So I've been looking at the city's formal comments, and it's this city's present administration that wrote it up. And it's like so long. I just don't. Where should I begin? So the city has put a lot of emphasis that they want the Willamette Cove, the Swan Island Lagoon, and Cathedral Park to be prioritized in cleanup, sequencing over other areas of the site. So instead of starting all the way upriver and working down, like by the Broadway Bridge and working down to eliminate recontamination, they want the remediation to start in the public places. Also, the city's letter pointed out that the EPA's plan does not address any of the shoreline along the Willamette Cove, And it's this sort of gray area between where the state DEQ would have to contract people, workers, to come in and remediate the shore, and whether, you know, in the water line, under the water line is where the EPA takes up. And, you know, there's, our river is affected by tides. The tide goes in, the tide goes out. So the shoreline, you know, heavy rains, it varies all the time. So it just makes sense that there would be a clear mark in the sand where the federal laws are, you know, just to make sure that everything's covered. But it's very unclear in this, in the EPA's document, and things couldn't, as we mentioned before, the state DEQ, you know, would have to go in and test it. I guess if we request, if enough people requested them to test this area, then they would have to. So, and then let's see. Also, the city really wants the fish advisories to be taken off sooner. So they just, the city has just, I'll just read. The city recognizes the need for fish advisories on a site-wide scale, but believes that more fish may be eaten sooner on localized scales if those areas are more heavily used for fishing and are a priority for cleanup, as described earlier in this comment. The city recognized that the benefit would apply only to fish with small home ranges, such as smallmouth bass. The city requests that the EPA address the feasibility of easing fish advisories for small home range fish species in localized areas when the monitoring data indicates the fish caught from these exposure areas have recovered enough to do so. So basically, they're asking the EPA to test the fish, or asking the EPA to mandate that the fish be tested in these small areas as it goes to see if the remediation is working, which doesn't make any sense, because they're only going, they want the EPA to go in to these like centralized areas that people of the city use and clean those places first. So the contamination will still just keep coming into these areas. And then they just think that magically the fish are going to bounce back and recover after just sort of, you know, taking off the top layer of sediment in these areas. So and then not even addressing the shoreline. Just kind of really odd. But I can, you know, in a way it's, you know, the city is trying to say that, it seems to me that the city is trying to say that people that use the park areas should be safe first, then, you know, rather than prioritizing a more methodical cleanup of the river. Just sort of odd. It's like, I know, it's I think it's hard to make a compromise when people just want to prioritize the things that are, I guess, more important to them. So, yeah. So that is one thing I noticed in the city's comments that seem strange. Earthquake preparedness. They also said that they want the EPA to work with FEMA, the city, and other local government agencies to include all appropriate measures in the record of decision to address recontamination risks associated with a catastrophic earthquake. In addition to the remedy section, design and action, the city requests that the fuel tank farms within the site be evaluated as a potential source of recontamination in the event of an earthquake. After we have invested hundreds of millions of dollars in this cleanup, we want to make sure that we do everything in the power to keep it clean. So in that way, the city's position is that the tanks in Linton should be evaluated. And I mean, they don't go so far to say that they should be replaced. But it does say address recontamination risks associated with a catastrophic earthquake. Yeah, so let's see. You can call in if you want. It's 503-231-8187 if you have any comments or concerns about what I'm talking about, or if you just tuned in, this is Water World, and I'm talking about the Willamette, or the Portland Harbor on the Willamette River. It's a super fun site. And I'm talking about the public comments that the city made to the EPA regarding the proposed plan for cleaning up the Willamette River. Oh, there's something interesting in here. The city requests that the EPA update its climate change evaluation to be more accurate and to develop a climate change adaptation plan for the cleanup. So that's pretty interesting that they're asking a federal agency to beef up their climate change policy with the political climate that's happening right now when we have a climate change denier running the show. Interesting. Okay. All right. So let's see. What else can we talk about? Yeah, we could do that. I needed to catch my breath a minute there. There's so much going on, you know, with the state of water in the world. And I totally like got buried in all these documents last night when I was researching for this show. One of the things that sort of popped up in a meeting that the Portland Harbor Community Coalition had with the City of Portland Bureau of Environmental Services, which is the agency that handles sewer ratepayer money, was that they, this agency is actually being sued right now for using ratepayer money to make these Superfund repairs. And it was really, really sort of strange in this meeting. Michael Jordan said that it's okay to spend ratepayer money on these remediations because all that money will come back. Like, because Portland, as I mentioned earlier, made the first move, so to speak, with doing baseline testing and feasibility studies and paying for them, that they'll be compensated when the other polluters come on board and start paying their fair share for the cleanup. And so it's ratepayer money, right? So I was like, well, so are all the ratepayers going to get a check from the little bit of money that they've been paying this whole time? And like, no, of course not, because it's just going to go back into the city's not general fund, though, but it's like sewer repair. So I don't know. It just, to me, there's like a little bit of a disconnect there. The city's comments to the EPA asked for transparency and very clear plans with how things are going to be funded and how things are going to be paid for. But then at the end of the day, you know, the city is very mysterious about, well, you know, you can go to the website and you can look at the checks that the BES has written out for if you're interested in that. But anyway, yeah, so they're being sued because they've been using sewer money for other things. We have Tony.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
This very informative show. I have never really listened to this hour before. But I do have a question about the Superfund, and I don't know if it relates with what you're talking about. But I notice on our property tax statement there's a certain amount of money that goes for Superfund cleanup. And I don't, how much of what is in the Superfund actually comes from, you know, residential sewage and stuff like that? Is it like half and half, or is that part of the problem in the Superfund, or is it mainly just the, you know, all the chemicals over the years?
So the Superfund isn't, the Superfund site isn't, one of the problems with it wasn't residential sewage. If there were biological contaminants in there, the city has remediated that with the sewer project.
Right.
So the issue with the Superfund area is heavy metals and toxins, PCBs, insecticides, pesticides, DDT in the sediment. So it needs to be either dredged and removed or capped. The river isn't a depositional river, so it won't be covered with natural remediation. It's simply been there for hundreds of years since the port has been in operation. With regard to your property taxes, I'm not sure. I'm not a property owner, but if you're paying, if there is a line item somewhere on your property taxes, then that's interesting. I haven't heard that yet.
Yeah, no, I've noticed it the last few years, and I thought, well, I can understand the city paying that if we're actually causing it, and but I'm just worried that we're footing some of the bill for a problem industry created in itself. So that's, I'm just curious about that. I'll go relook at my bill a little later today to make sure, but I'm pretty sure of that. So anyway, thanks for your help.
Thanks for your question. So the city is a polluter, and I'm not exactly sure outside of sewage what it is, but also there are a number of orphan sites along the Superfund miles, and those sites are places where they just couldn't find anybody that owns it. And so because it's in city limits, the city will be on the hook for that. So, you know, it's real important that the industries that polluted the river are on the hook for their fair share, considering that the city has already fronted so much money, as you know, citizen ratepayer and possibly property tax money to have these things looked at the get. So that's all the time we have today. I'm going to leave you with the Raging Grannies, who performed this little song at the Willamette Festival last it was July 31st. So the Raging Grannies.
Don't drink the water. PCB pollutes the water. Don't wade in the river. Don't wade in the river, children. Don't wade in the river. Industries polluted our river. We kill her in the river. Toxic sediment, we know it. Phthalates in the river. Superfund toxics in the river. Clean up our water. Clean up our water, you polluters. Clean up our water. You know right to ruin our water. Our beautiful Willamette River.
Is a proud co-sponsor, Plaid Tidings. Produced by Enlightened Theatrics, the play runs from November 23rd to December 11th at Salem's Historic Grand Theater. Enlightened Theatrics provides professional musical theater experiences and theatrical education. Plaid Tidings is a special holiday edition of Forever Plaid, a musical homage to the Close Harmony guy groups that reached the height of their popularity during the 1950s. Again, that's Plaid Tidings, produced by Enlightened Theatrics from November 23rd to December 11th at Salem's Historic.